Montana talks here. Live and local. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
This is where Montana talks. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Oh, man, you just got to laugh. I'm with Tim and Savage on this one. I just heard the Fox News update at the top of the hour. I know some of you heard a different national news update at the top of the hour. But, you know, here in our Montana Talks studios, our studios are located at a radio station, KBUL, that is a Fox News radio affiliate. And so I was just reading through kind of the Fox News radio headlines. It's a rundown of all the stories they're working on or reporting on throughout the day. And then, of course, anything else that comes up. But Tim and Savage just sent us a message on the Montana Talks app. And he says, oh, for Pete's sake. This is definitely today's oh, for Pete's sake moment, unless something else comes up here. People are skipping Cinco de Mayo because they fear ICE might be rounding people up. It's like, I just had to ask Google here, how do you say, como se dice, oh, for Pete's sake, in Espanol? How do you say, oh, for Pete's sake, in Spanish? I think it is, let's see, ay, por el amor de Dios, oh, for Pete's sake. Funny sidebar. So, yesterday, a lot of people had their Cinco de Mayo celebrations, and apparently there was a big Cinco de Mayo celebration on the south side of Billings, in the South Park, and a bunch of anti-Trump protesters, well, not a bunch, probably just a handful, but some anti-Trump, Trump protesters thought they should show up at a Cinco de Mayo party, and apparently they got thrown out. They got thrown out. Some of the Hispanic American families that were there putting on the Cinco de Mayo party said, hey, this is a Cinco de Mayo party, not your political protest. Get the freaking heck out of here. That's just hysterical. But that's kind of symbolic of what just took place in the November elections, right? I mean, Hispanic Americans in big numbers voted for Donald J. Trump and the Republicans. Black in numbers, in larger numbers in a long time, voted for Donald J. Trump. The young people are moving towards Donald J. Trump and move towards Donald J. Trump and the Republicans. So basically the Hispanic Americans, you know, the ones that are citizens, the ones that are here in this country legally, they kicked the Democrats out. So that the fact that the Nava boys, as one source in local media informed me, kicked the anti-Trump protesters out of the Cinco de Mayo celebration on the Billings South side is just so symbolic of Hispanic Americans kicking the Democrats out in general. But yeah, for those of you who missed the Fox News report here, apparently some cities, the blue cities, have canceled celebrations of Cinco de Mayo amid fears that the Trump administration might start targeting legal residents. I mean, what a bunch of nut jobs. Todd Lyons, who is the acting ICE director, said, quote, if you're in the country legally and you haven't committed a crime, by all means, go to a celebration. But of course, those who should be worried, who shouldn't be celebrating at all, in this country are the criminal illegal aliens who invaded this country and then committed a whole host of other crimes after breaking in. All right, quick break. Phone lines are open for you.
It's May 5th, and this is your Fox Daily Snapshot. Today is Cinco de Mayo. The origins of the day go back to the Franco-Mexican War of the 1860s, as 2,000 Mexican soldiers held off 6,000 French soldiers in the Battle of the Puebla in 1861. In the U.S., Cinco de Mayo is celebrated as a day of Mexican-American heritage and pride. Also on this date in 1891, Carnegie Hall in New York City opened for the first time. Peter Tchaikovsky was the guest conductor. The soundtrack to West Side Story went to number one on the charts in 1962.
Skyscrapers blooming America, Cadillacs zooming America.
The iconic musical would stay at the top spot for 54 weeks. If it's your birthday today, you share it with actor Henry Cavill, born in 1983, and English singer Adele.
We could
born in 1988. I'm Tushar Saxena with your Fox Daily Snapshot. Hey, Clay, if there was a summer camp for critical thinking, we'd be the chief counselors. Those jellyheads in June would be intellectual warriors by August.
Be a lot of fun, too. Some Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure references thrown in.
This podcast, like a daily dose of that, minus the campfires, archery, and pranking the girls.
The bona fide boot camp for critical thinking. You can get in on it for free at the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts. Just search our names, Clay and Buck. Listen and subscribe.
Substance use disorder and addiction is so isolating. And so, as a Black woman in recovery, hope must be loud. It grows louder when you ask for help and you're vulnerable. It is the thread that lets you know that no matter what happens, you will be okay.
When we learn the power of hope, recovery is possible. Find out how at startwithhope.com. Brought to you by the National Council for Mental Wellbeing, Shatterproof, and the Ad Council.
Montana Talks, where you get the mic. Call in now at 406-294-0970. Here's your host, Aaron Flint.
Man, speaking of illegal aliens, we could do like a whole illegal alien roundup news update. That's going to take some time, though, because there is a lot of news to get to on that front. We got a story out of Cascade County, Great Falls. We got at least one, maybe two, maybe three stories out of Bozeman, Montana. And we've got a story about illegal alien now getting deported who was not only in this country illegally, but was also convicted of felony possession of narcotics and a DUI. So a lot of news to get to here this morning. Let's start with your phone calls. 406-294-0970. Francis in Big Fork, happy Cinco de Mayo to you. Happy Monday. How are you doing?
Yeah, same to you. And I think we should have Mexican food today, don't you?
Well, it's, you know, hey, why not, right? You know, why not? I got to start yesterday. We snuck some tacos in after the volleyball tournament wrapped up. So had to sneak that in there, but... Yeah, what's on your mind this morning?
Well, I just, you know, it's just all these people coming in this country and, like, the ones that they kicked out, you know, all these rioters. I think George Soros has a lot of money behind him. Because, and all these people that are coming in, you notice how beautiful new shoes, new phones. Nobody gets us new shoes and new phones, so we're paying for it, but, you know, it's aggravating.
Oh,
like,
I hear
this
you.
This is kind of changing the subject, but like all these environmentalists, we should just kick them out of the state because they ruin stuff. I want to sue every one of them, and I haven't got too far in my petition, but most people said it's pretty hard to get rid of a federal judge.
Well, that's it. Yeah, the federal judges here in Montana, that's who's been shutting down our jobs, killing the timber industry that tried to go after oil, gas, and coal. Thanks to President Trump, I think we're going to start getting on the path to making all those industries great again. But, yeah, the environmentalists, what a bunch of hypocrites. The environmental wackos are the ones who constantly, you know, tell us, oh, don't have kids because it's bad for the climate. By the way, didn't the Antarctic ice sheet, wasn't there a new study that just came out saying that the Antarctic ice sheet added ice? They just added a whole bunch of ice over the last couple of years. I think that was a story I saw on X earlier this morning. But they've been telling us, stop having kids because it's bad for the environment. Now those same leftists are at their pro-illegal alien protests saying, we need more people in the country. Because people aren't having enough kids. So the same people that have been telling you not to have more kids because it's bad for the environment are the same people who've been telling you that. The same people that have been telling you that. Oh no, you need to allow more people into the country. Yeah, it's so crazy. Let's see. I guess we can do a little abbreviated version of an illegal alien roundup. A story for you here. You know, as Francis was alluding to here, it's. It's not just illegal aliens coming from Mexico. In fact, that's what's so funny is when you look at some of these protests, it's like some of these people are still stuck in the 1990s. They think that that somehow when Americans are calling for the deportation of illegal aliens, that it's somehow some sort of anti-Mexican thing. And it's like, go look at the numbers of the illegal aliens that invaded this country in the last 4 years. It's over 100 different countries that these illegal aliens came from. Russians, Chinese, Yemen, Iran. Some countries that have a lot of bad actors in them that were invading this country. Now, I don't think of the people in Romania necessarily being hostile to the United States of America, but frankly, it doesn't matter where you came from if you're breaking into this country illegally. This was a story late last week. I heard it on the Montana State News Network update earlier this morning. This is from the U.S. Attorney's Office here in Montana. 7 Romanian nationals accused of crossing illegally from Canada into Montana appeared in federal court for arraignment last week, according to U.S. Attorney Kurt Almey. This was like a vanload, an entire vanload of illegal aliens that traveled in the middle of night from Canada into the United States of America. I think 7 defendants in total were arraigned in federal court in Great Falls last week. If convicted, let's see, well, there's a couple of them. Two of the defendants pleaded not guilty to transporting illegal aliens, which, if convicted, carries a maximum punishment of 5 years of imprisonment, a $250,000 fine, and 3 years of supervised release. The other 5 defendants pleaded not guilty to illegal entry of an alien. If convicted, they could be sentenced to up to 6 months in prison, fined $100,000, and placed on supervised release for 1 year. But anyway, 7 defendants. The government alleged in court documents that the first 2 individuals were each driving a van back on April 25th of 2020 of this year. The other defendants were passengers in the vans, which the U.S. Border Patrol detected illegally crossing into the United States at around 2:30 in the morning on April 25th. Law enforcement located the vans traveling south on I-15, stopped the vehicles, took the occupants into custody, and then transported them to the Sweetgrass Border Patrol station for further investigation and processing. In total, the 2 vans contained 21 people. 21 people in these vans. And so several illegal aliens now being prosecuted in federal court. That's just one news story, and I've got several more in front of me right here. All right, quick break. Back after this.
This is the Montana Economic Minute.
Economics can be an obscure subject with dense terminology and arcane ideas. But like a lot of scientific disciplines, every now and then an idea gets popularized and spreads far beyond the small world of professional journals and seminars. One of these ideas is something called the Laffer Curve. Its simplicity is both compelling and problematic. Its essence is that how people react to taxes determines how much those taxes raise in revenues. At one extreme, people don't react at all, so that when you get, say, double the tax rate, you get double the revenue. At the other extreme, people react very strongly, cutting back on taxable activities so that hiking tax rates doesn't raise any new revenue at all. It works in reverse as well, and ever since the time of Reagan, many have pushed the notion that cutting tax rates will actually increase tax revenues, as people respond by working harder and growing the tax base. The problematic aspect of the Laffer Curve is it boils down to an empirical question. How much do people actually respond? I'm Patrick Barkey.
Brought to you by the University of Montana Bureau of Business and Economic Research.
Donald Trump's America.
The president spent the latter half of Monday campaigning in Ohio, but hit on the Supreme Court task ahead before he left Washington. He indicated he wants the process to fill the late Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg's seat to move fast.
I'd much rather have a vote before the election, because there's a lot of work to be done, and I'd much rather have it. We have plenty of time to do it.
At his first stop in Vandalia, Ohio, he said the process will start with the announcement on Friday or Saturday.
We're vetting right now. It'll be a brilliant person. It will be a woman.
In the meantime, Democratic nominee Joe Biden, speaking in Wisconsin, focused on what he says is a failed White House response to COVID-19.
He failed to act. He panicked. And America's paid the worst price of any nation in the world.
Nationally, Biden holds a slim lead over the president as the calendar moves under 6 weeks to the election. Grinnell Scott, Fox News.
Tackling the issues that shape our state. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Hey, for better or worse, it's a wrap. The Montana legislature adjourned last week. And, of course, each week during the legislative session, we got a chance to catch up with Henry Kriegel from Americans for Prosperity Montana. We're going to catch up with him here in just a second. But first, let's go to Lee in Livingston. Lee, what's on your mind this morning? Thanks for the call.
I would just like to make a comment that I was raised in a staunch Democratic family for four generations. You walk in, vote Democrat on everything, and walk back out of the election. And I voted for Jimmy Carter, like I was told to by my family. And after 4 years, I about lost my home. I was down to a notice from the bank that if I didn't make my next month's payment, they were going to evict me. But I never had a pay in my life I didn't pay on time. And finally, I thought, Reagan makes sense to me. He's pro-life and a lot of other things that I really like. I don't care what my family likes or not. I'm going to vote for him whether they get mad at me or not. So I voted for Reagan. And after 1 year, I said to my boss when I finally did get back to work, can I have a day off? I got something I need to do. He said, you can't have a day off. We got so much work anymore. You take a day off, it'll really hurt us. You've got to work every single day. We can't give anybody a day off. We got so much work. And I've never voted for another Democrat ever again. The Democrats have showed me through Jimmy Carter what true communism, socialism, progressive, however you want to label it, really is. Nobody in my family that I know, except for a couple of diehards, vote for a Democrat anymore. We were 100% Democratic family. Jimmy Carter changed that. Already gave away the Panama Canal. That was really the nail in the coffin.
Yeah, and how many people said, oh, no, he didn't. He didn't give it away. No, China's not running the Panama Canal. But it's kind of like that new red hat we've been seeing. Trump was right about everything.
Yeah, he was right,
that's for sure. Yeah, Lee, great to hear from you. Thanks for the call. Yeah, it's interesting because I think, you know, I came from a family, I know on my mom's side, you know, great grandparents, you know, big time Democrats, and then my grandparents, you know, voted for Reagan, probably similar story like yours. And I think there was a little consternation over the fact that they were voting for a Republican, but I think any of the folks, you know, who were old school Democrats in Montana that hadn't left the Democrat Party under Ronald Reagan, that's who Donald Trump brought across the finish line, first in 2016 and then again in 2024, some would say also in 2020. That's why Butte, you know, went big for Trump like they hadn't gone for a Republican since the 50s. And Great Falls, that's why Great Falls has become a Republican stronghold as well. All right, let's jump into it. Henry Kriegel, Deputy State Director for Americans for Prosperity Montana. Henry, where do you want to start? How would you recap Montana's legislative session?
Well, first of all, good to be here with you this morning, Aaron. And I do have a lot of I resonate a lot with Lee's story there from Livingston. I too voted for Jimmy Carter back in the day, and then I was cured by a new dawn for America. That was Reagan's slogan, and I was a student there at Columbia University, started Young Americans for Freedom, and I was well on my way. But any case, where do we want to start? Probably this is my least satisfying of my three sessions I've worked up there in Helena with Americans for Prosperity, Montana. We did have some wins. We had some losses. It was a tough session for a lot of people. I had a great talk last night with Patriots Roundtable Group, representing the Kometz's group out there in Miles City, doing the recap. I would say we had some wins. We did get a right of first refusal bill through the legislature that would now put out for open bidding any upgrades in transmission lines or energy infrastructure in the state of Montana. No longer will go through the last vendor. Thereby, there'll be competition in services. There'll be more innovation and resulting in lower rates for ratepayers. We did get a bill, what we call a Baby Rains Act, regulations from the executive in need of scrutiny. We got that through this session. That will put a lot more scrutiny on unelected, unaccountable bureaucrats when they try to write regulations that have an economic impact, particularly on small businesses in Montana. We'll give will restore the legislator's role to oversee that. We did get some tax reform done. We didn't get the governor's bill, which we thought was the best bill, which would have brought us very close to a flat tax. We didn't get that. It didn't even get out of committee on the Senate side. What we did get was Speaker Lehrer's HB 337, which lowered rates down to from 5.65, the top rate, that would be the lower down on the top rate of 5.65%, and the bottom rate is 4.7. Still, we're higher than our neighbors. We're the highest among the red states in the U.S. in income taxes. We're gradually making some inroads to lower it, which is a step in the right direction. Not quite where we wanted to go, because flat tax is the most equitable tax, because the last time I did my math, and I learned it before Common Core, 5% of 1 million is still a lot more than 5% of 50,000. So the rich do pay more taxes, and I will never submit to class warfare language and go after our drivers of our economy, which is what some on the right of center tried to do with some of their bills, to our surprise. We didn't quite win out on any major transformational housing bills. SB 266, which was put forward by Senator Jeremy Treves, which would have allowed for, not mandate, but allowed for duplexes, triplexes, and fourplexes in areas zoned for single residential housing, providing that there'd be a permit issued and there was proper infrastructure of water and sewer. That went down past the Senate, but could not get out of House local government. So we had some nominal reforms there on housing. Still, the housing situation in Montana is an acute situation, particularly in the bigger cities where people cannot afford to actually even live. Therefore, employers cannot hire staff because there's not adequate housing. So we do have some serious problems here. We had a few wins. We're grateful for the wins. The biggest loss, as I mentioned earlier in my time with you during the session, Aaron, was HB 320, Montana's Academic Prosperity Program for Students. That would have greatly expanded opportunities for kids to get the education most appropriate for them by providing dollar-for-dollar tax credits for parents who paid out-of-pocket up to $3,600 per student, or dollar-for-dollar tax credits for individuals and organizations and businesses who would contribute to a scholarship-awarding organization. It failed on third reading because we had some defections among the so-called several conservative Republicans and the moderates, along with Democrats who voted lockstep against any real significant substantive education freedom bill.
Yeah, man, I hear you. When you kicked off your update, and of course, Henry Kriegel, Deputy State Director for Americans Prosperity, joins us once every week during the legislative session. And of course, this segment brought to you by AFP Montana. But man, I feel your frustration because, yeah, you said this was your most frustrating session of the three sessions you've worked. Because, yeah, the 21 session, first time Republicans not only had a supermajority in the legislature, but they also had the governor, got the governor's office for the first time in 16 years. So that was a great session. The 23 session, a great session. Income tax relief, property tax rebates. There were a lot of accomplishments. And then this session, I mean, definitely some accomplishments. I mean, while the income tax relief plan isn't perfect and still we still need some reductions, at least, it's still going to be seen as a historic income tax cut. The property tax relief, it sounds like that's going to be a mixed bag. I mean, residential property taxpayers like me and a lot of us will benefit from it, but then there's others that are wondering how much they're going to take a hit as a result of it. And so, but I think it's just kind of the most frustrating thing is that so much of it was dominated by Republican infighting and a handful that would vote with the Democrats. And it wasn't just in the Senate, it was in the House too.
That's typical of the way it works, but on the Republican side, the defection was felt very acutely from the very get-go. From day one, and they never really kind of recovered and secured their footing after that, and it's a tough session. So there's some substantive stuff left on the table here that has to get resolved because we have a constitutional requirement to balance the budget, and right now HB 2 would put us $1 billion over the next 2-4 years in the hole, and that is not permissible by our Constitution. So the legislature's abrogated its responsibility to do that. and it's going to be punted over to the governor and the governor's office to make the cuts, or he might veto the entire thing with Segal. So,
yeah, I was going to say, if I was the governor, I'd be pretty frustrated, because it's who was it that made the point on the show last week? They said it's the legislature is the one that has mandated it to pass a balanced budget, and they didn't do that with, you know, a handful of Republicans voting with Democrats. And so now the governor's got to go in and try to figure out how much he can veto, and I hope he vetoes as much of this as he possibly can, but now he's got to go in and clean up their mess. I mean, what did they just figure, oh, let's just shove everything in there and then leave it to the governor and his staff to weed it out here?
Yep, that is a problem. And you know, I saw the hearings on the Senate floor. You had people like Chairman Carl Lim of Senate Finance heroically try to introduce at least, 18-20 amendments. You had Senate President Regeer with his and John Esp with his. None of them went through. And, you know, we got an 18% increase in the general fund spending and 10% overall. This is a bad situation. The legislature has abrogated its responsibility and has punted over to the governor's office. I mean, this is why you have committees. They take up certain sections of the budget. They debate it. They dissect it, and they're supposed to put it together with the collective wisdom of the legislature. And that didn't happen. And so the governor's going to have to do
so
that.
So post-session, what are you focused on here with about 30 seconds to go before the break? Henry Kriegel.
What are we focused on here? We focus on regrouping. We focus on candidate recruitment. We focus on getting candidates that will do the job. And if there's no real contested 2026 U.S. Senate race to be engaged in, we will probably engage more in the state Senate and state House races come 2026. So that's what we've got to look forward to. Aaron, thank you so much for your time this morning.
All right, Henry Kriegel. Yeah, great to catch up with you as always. And I think we'll see you in studio here pretty soon for one of our next updates as well. So looking forward to that. All right, we've got the phone lines open right after this, 406-294-0970. If you want to jump in on the conversation, give us a call right now. You can message us on the Montana Talks app.
Talking about the issues that matter to Montana statewide. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right, phone lines are open for you, 406-294-0970. Let me just throw out some quick headlines here before we jump right back into the phone lines. You know, I think once the dust settles, it's going to be interesting to start calculating all of the victories and all of the wins that are coming out of this Montana legislative session. Because, you know, look, we've focused a lot on the handful of Republicans that were voting with the Democrats and voting against what the people of Montana sent them to Helena to do, and the massive overspending and all of that. But man, we can't forget the sacrifice of so many of those lawmakers that went to Helena and did get some really good things across the finish line. Last week, we had Matt Sharp, who's a senior counsel for the Alliance Defending Freedom. And you guys have heard me talk about ADF before. My wife does incredible work for ADF, so wanted to let you know about that again, of course, up front here. But three different headlines. You know, I'll do I get a whole host of information for my show prep here. I'll see what people are talking about on X. I've got Fox News. I've got the Daily Caller. I've got the Federalist. I've got local sources. That's why my desk is covered with stuff. But I'll also do like some Google News alerts. These three headlines came up in some Google News alerts that I got. Montana governor signs bill protecting speech for teachers and public servants. Governor Gianforte signed into law House Bill 400. That's the bill by Representative Braxton Mitchell and State Senator Teresa Manzella. This was the bill that basically protects not only kids, but it protects teachers and other public employees from not being forced into this woke, radical, transgender, gender pronoun game. And it protects their right to free speech. So that's huge. Two other headlines here. Montana governor signs bill protecting families and organizations from religious discrimination when it comes to adoption or foster care. That's a huge bill. In places like Oregon and out there on the left coast, they are discriminating against Christians. They are trying to say, well, if you're a Christian and you have Christian beliefs, you're not going to be able to adopt babies. You're not going to be able to adopt kids. And so that's a big bill. Another one here signed into law by Governor Greg Gianforte, Montana governor, signs bill protecting pregnancy centers and protecting life. This is known as the CARE Act, a first of its kind bill that protects pregnancy centers by ensuring their ability to promote a culture of life. So basically, you've seen where California and some of these other left coast states have forced pro-life pregnancy centers into promoting abortion and trying to force them to promote the Planned Parenthood abortion mills. This bill protects that from happening in Montana. So anyway, great to see those three headlines. All right, let's go into the phone lines. We've got Mike in Big Timber. Mike, what's going on?
Good morning, Aaron. You mentioned those folks that came in from Canada that were arraigned up in Great Falls. Why aren't they being sent back to Canada, where they came from? Why should the taxpayers in Montana have to foot the bill, you know, for their arraignment? And then you mentioned the fact of the sentencing could be imprisonment. Will they be put in prison here in Montana and the taxpayers have to pay for that? Doesn't make sense, Aaron.
That's a good question. So, yeah, why are they being arrested and prosecuted versus just sent back? I mean, the other argument to that is, well, if you just send them back to Canada, then they'll just try to enter the United States once again. Whereas if you start a criminal proceeding, charges, you can ratchet it up. And you could still ship them back, right, eventually, but... Yeah, that's a good question. Why did they choose to go the prosecutorial route on this one instead of just shipping them right back to where they came from?
Right. Did the people of Montana have to pay for their, imprisonment? You said there were 21 of them. That's a lot of folks.
Seven that are being charged, 21 in total that were in the vans. So, yeah, you know, the other thing that I think is interesting about this is, okay, so we know... You know, the latest estimates that Governor Gianforte told us he received from federal law enforcement is that there's 1,000 illegal aliens already in Montana. What this story tells us, and it's what we've been talking about, is as the southern border has now been secured, there's going to be more of an effort to probe our northern border. And that's what officials have been talking about, which is why we have this need to secure our northern border. But the other thing that I find interesting about this is illegal aliens are still trying to invade this country, even with Trump as president. And to me, this goes back to the lawlessness of our federal judges who are ignoring the rule of law to push this open borders agenda. Frank Mealy has a piece at his Heartland Diary USA blog. He's the former editor of the Daily Interlake in Kalispell. And his headline is about the treason of the judiciary. So you think about it. When the Democrats and Joe Biden and John Tester allowed this treasonous invasion to begin in the first place, we all called it for what it is, a treasonous invasion of the United States of America. Well, dare we not call it a treason of the judiciary now when these lawless left-wing judges are allowing those who invaded this country to remain in this country?
Right, and I think the responsibility could fall back to the Canadian border. Those folks should have never let those folks cross over into Montana. And this liberal prime minister now, he doesn't care. He'll move them out of his country and into our country. He doesn't care. That's another thing the president of the United States ought to get right on this guy and say, hey, secure your border.
Well, and that's why I think President Trump was somewhat glad to see the far-left Carney guy get elected prime minister, because he can work him over much more easily than he could have if a more conservative guy had been elected prime minister of Canada. Mike, great to hear from you. Thanks for the call. Next up, phone lines are open for you, 294-0970. We've got Jim in Malta. Jim, thanks for the call.
Hey, good morning, Aaron.
Yeah, good morning.
Buenos días, señor. ¿Cómo está?
Hey, I was going to say tu madre, but let's see. BNE2, there we go, there we go. See, and, since it's Cinco de Mayo, one of my first restaurant jobs was washing dishes at a Mexican restaurant, so I only know how to talk trash in Spanish. Being nice in Spanish is a little harder.
Oh, yeah. Well, I know a lot of colorful metaphors in the Spanish language, but I thought it probably wouldn't be appropriate on your show.
Especially because, man, washing dishes in a Mexican restaurant, well, you were a truck driver, so you've heard a few choice words in different languages there, too, huh?
Oh, yeah, especially when I was trucking down in East L.A. and not lower Alabama either, but... So I don't know if you saw that, not been much news on it, but on the 28th of last month, the president did an executive order reinforcing the English-speaking requirement for commercial truck drivers.
And, yeah.
You know, back, that's been on the books since the 30s, 391.11 Part 2B. And that's where every driver is supposed to be able to rewrite and communicate the English language. Well, back in 2015, under Barack Hussein Obama, the Commercial Vehicle Safety Alliance, which sets the out-of-service criteria for the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration, which is the enforcement arm of the DOT, told them that they didn't have to take them out of service anymore if they couldn't speak English. So basically, it was up to law enforcement. You know, like Illinois, they had 15 different languages on like a flip chart to try and be able to communicate with a truck driver. And it should never, ever have to be up to our men and women in law enforcement trying to determine what language we are in America. My belly should speak English, but they chose to ignore it. You know, and it's been a law, like you said, since...
especially when these guys aren't driving a Prius on the interstate.
Right.
They're driving 18-wheelers. I mean, and yeah, and look at how many foreign truck drivers are on the American interstates, or people that don't even speak English. How big of a problem has this become?
Well, not only that, but, you know, I think about when you have Evelyn Byburn on what it does to small business, to, you know, drivers that are trying to, you know, make a living for themselves, have 5, 10, 15 or 20 trucks, which is about 80% of our, 86% of our trucking industry. But, you know, they get all these cheaper drivers that they can get in, can't speak English, and have, I mean, horrific crashes, and it really hurts smaller business, which is the largest segment of the trucking industry.
Yeah, we've had some horrific accidents here in Montana involving a situation like what you described. I know Denver, Colorado had a really vicious one as well. And so, yeah, so President Trump basically puts this executive order out reinforcing the English language requirement operating big rigs on American roadways, and the typical outrage from the left ensued. It seemed like. Jim, hold that thought. If you can, I got to hit the hard break here, but if you got more to share and you want to stick around, we'll come back to you right after this. 406-294-0970 is the number for you, and you can message us on the Montana Talks app.
Waking up on the right side. This is the Sean Hannity Morning Minute.
The president repeated his vow to revoke HAVID and their tax-exempt status. Well, why did they get 460, million taxpayer dollars? This is insane when they have $53 billion in endowments. I don't think any university, unless maybe I'd consider a community college or a trade school, For people that can't afford it or means to help them, if you're going to invest in education, not this elite, woke, DEI, crazy, you know, with pro-Hamas protesters, college campuses. No, if you want to go to an elite college, that's on you. That's on your parents. That's on, you know, going out and working like everybody else.
From coast to coast, from sea to shining sea, it's the Sean Hannity Show.
Warning, the national debt is spiraling out of control. Trade wars are causing record volatility, and tariffs could cause inflation to make a devastating comeback. Are you ready for what more 2025 could bring? Will you sit on the sidelines and wait? Or will you take action today to help protect your hard-earned retirement savings? And what if you could do it tax and penalty free? Find out more by requesting your free 2025 gold and silver kit from the top-rated precious metals company, Goldco. Plus, you could get an unlimited bonus silver if you qualify. Help secure your future today. Visit HannityGold.com or call 855-815-GOLD to learn more. That's HannityGold.com or 855-815-GOLD. Visit HannityGold.com or call 855-815-GOLD to learn more. That's HannityGold.com or 855-815-GOLD.
Securing America.
Real ID, that's a driver's license or ID card that meets specific federal security standards that'll be required to board domestic flights and to access certain federal facilities. TSA Acting Deputy Administrator Brian Stahl telling Fox News, any reports of Real ID being a national ID card are false, that it's part of a law passed by Congress 20 years ago to address a vulnerability that led to 9/11.
This is all about strengthening the security of our skies and ensuring a sufficient level of document and identity integrity.
While many Americans are flocking to DMVs for real IDs ahead of Thursday's deadline, others are choosing to opt out for now by either using valid passports as their preferred form of ID for travel or waiting until their current driver's license expires and then renewing it, in which they'll get an updated real ID. Jeff Manasso, Fox News.
Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right, let's go back quickly to Jim in Malta, and then we've got another caller to get to here before we run out of time this hour of the show, but we'll have open phones coming up in the 9 o'clock hour as well. Jim in Malta, anything else you wanted to share with our listeners across Montana?
Oh, I was just going to say, I think it will help out our safety on our highway system. Obviously, you know, I've been involved in it for a lot of years, but you know, this has been an ongoing issue for many, many years, and non-speaking truck drivers. And, I mean, if they can't read signs or communicate with, you know, law enforcement, it doesn't make the highways much safer. When they first came out with the notice, they used to have the sheet of paper from Washington that said, yeah, you don't have to enforce it anymore in the way stations. And every DOT officer I spoke to was just disgusted by it, but their hands were tied due to the NGO, which is the Commercial Vehicle Safety Alliance, and Washington's political correctness.
Well, it's great to get your insight. I know you've been involved at the national level as an owner-operator truck driver yourself. So, yeah, appreciate getting your great insight on this. I know I talked about it briefly last week on the show after the news broke, but great to get your insider perspective as well. Jim, thanks for the call. Great to hear from you. Next up, let's go to Tanner in Lakeside. Tanner, great to hear from you. What's on your mind?
Happy Monday, Aaron. I just want your great listeners to remember that we don't want to let the arsonist play the role as the fireman. You know, before this session even convened, the governor needed to have his budget out by November 15th, and that budget was north of $18 billion. So right out of the gate, the governor's budget would have been unconstitutional because the House Bill 2 that we're dealing with right now is 16.6. So we all hope that the governor does the right thing and line item vetoes that thing. I encourage all of your listeners to reach out to the governor and make sure that we can get back to fiscal responsibility and fiscal restraint. You know, I'm running for chair of the Montana GOP, and that's part of our platform is limited government. So I encourage everybody to reach out to Governor Gianforte and make sure that we hold him to account.
Yeah, I saw the Yellowstone County Republicans sent out a list of some of the spending bills. They're encouraging people to call on the governor to veto. Yeah, very clearly, I think that's the biggest disappointment out of this legislative session is the massive spending that got across the finish line. I mean, look, and it's like, you know, you see the nine being quoted saying, well, we started off on a bad foot from day one with the committee assignments. Well, yeah, but then that was corrected, and you still dug in and kept voting with the Democrats. And so, yeah, the governor's got to veto this massive overspending. I mean, he had a great first session and a second session. And I just think, man, if this stuff doesn't get vetoed, I think it's going to be very bad for Republicans across the board.
It is. It's bad for our brand. You know, in the governor's defense, a lot of this stuff comes from Lou Jones and the chair of the appropriations. You know, that money's already earmarked and spent before our great people even get to Helena. So in his defense, he has to work with that whole gamut of the Solutions Caucus Republicans as well. And it puts everybody in a tough spot. But now's the time for him to do the right thing and break out his pen and start inking that thing up.
Yeah, we have a great story on our Montana Talks website right now. Finley Warden, I let him take over a segment for our podcast, and he talked. One thing he pointed out is, look, a lot of young people voted for the first time ever, and they voted in a big way for Trump and the Republicans. But if Republicans don't follow through, they could lose these young voters for the next generation. And so now is the time to prove to these young people that you're going to deliver on why they voted for you.
That's what we're shooting for. That's why I'm running for chairman, not taxing Social Security, all these things that the folks want, that the folks need, to help our senior citizens. All that stuff could be done. But the problem is the money's already spent before it even gets to hell on us. So we need to start, trimming the fat, getting rid of these derps or these rhinos in our Republican caucus, and start getting back to doing the business of the folks. Because they pulled that lever for Republicans. They deserve to have Republican policies on the backside.
All right, Tanner, great to hear from you. And it sounds like there was a great Lincoln-Reagan-Trump dinner in Kalispell as well. So I appreciate your phone call. Hey, we've got the phone lines open heading into the 9 o'clock hour as well. If you want to jump in on the conversation, especially you legislators out there, I've already been getting a couple of messages saying, hey, can I be on the show? Call in. We got the phones open.
This is the Montana Economic Minute.
Economics can be an obscure subject with dense terminology and arcane ideas. But like a lot of scientific disciplines, every now and then an idea gets popularized and spreads far beyond the small world of professional journals and seminars. One of these ideas is something called the Laffer Curve. Its simplicity is both compelling and problematic. Its essence is that how people react to taxes determines how much those taxes raise in revenues. At one extreme, people don't react at all, so that when you get, say, double the tax rate, you get double the revenue. At the other extreme, people react very strongly, cutting back on taxable activities so that hiking tax rates doesn't raise any new revenue at all. It works in reverse as well, and ever since the time of Reagan, many have pushed the notion that cutting tax rates will actually increase tax revenues, as people respond by working harder and growing the tax base. The problematic aspect of the Laffer Curve is it boils down to an empirical question. How much do people actually respond? I'm Patrick Barkey.
Brought to you by the University of Montana Bureau of Business and Economic Research.